This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Happy New Year. We hope you've had a safe and happy Christmas, and we're looking forward to another great year of art in 2026. As is our custom, we are broadcasting a repeat show in January, and we've chosen our May 2025 interview with fashion historian Jane Malthus. This was the episode that won Sightlines the Best Arts or Literature podcast at the Otago Access Radio Air Awards last year. We think it's worth another listen. Today on Sightlines, we're talking about the art of fashion. Our guest, Jane Malthus, is a dress historian and a leading New Zealand expert in her field. She is the co-curator of a major exhibition that has just opened at Toi Tū Museum in Dunedin, Eden in Dunedin, and the author of the exceptionally beautiful associated book, Central Otago Couture. Jane, welcome to Sightlines.
Thanks.
Can I start with Eden in Dunedin and the book, which really is stunning? In a review in the spin-off, it has said, "This is a shining nugget of a book, bound in cloth the colour of Otago autumn and its rolling gold tussocked landscape, the bright blue page marking ribbon, the wide open sky. I thrust it into the hands of friends like treasure. I feel like I'm letting them in on a secret." Wow, that's quite the sales pitch. Who was involved in the creation of this gorgeous publication?
Well, first of all, it's a Te Papa Press publication, and their designer, Alan Dare of Area Design, created it in that sense. But Claire Reno and I co-authored it, dividing the topics according to our particular interests and previous involvement with the Eden Hall collection. We started in earnest on the text about late 2023. Derek Henderson took the photographs, most of them. Mark Fenton from Alexandra took the close-up detailed fabric shots. Most of the photos were taken in April 2024, but we also did a photo shoot in 2019. It was a great experience. It was a fantastic experience working on that photo shoot. There was a great team of people. Margie Robertson from NOMD was the stylist on the photo shoot. The models were amazing. The locations were majestic. But you know, we were doing it in the early morning and at dusk quite often because that's the light that Derek liked to use. So sometimes it was freezing.
Yes. I can well imagine, and that would take quite some fortitude on the part of everybody concerned, but particularly the models, because some of those frocks are not exactly providing a lot of coverage.
No, exactly. We had dressing gowns and rugs and capes and hot water bottles.
And look, you can tell, though, from the final result, the photographs are just breathtaking. They are gorgeous. The book is about the dresses collected by Eden Hoare. Can you give us a thumbnail sketch of Eden and how, as a Maniatoto farmer, he came to have a collection of New Zealand's most notable frocks?
So Eden Hoare was a farmer, first and foremost. He had been a soldier in World War II. I've come to understand, as I worked on the book, that his driving force for creating this collection was to create a tourist attraction in the Naseby area. Naseby had been bypassed by the road and the rail, and he wanted to bring tourists back. He'd travelled widely since the Second World War and knew about tourist attractions in other places, so I think he wanted to create something that would drag people up that road to Naseby. He knew about New Zealand designer fashion because he had been involved with the Miss New Zealand shows. That's a story that's in the book. And he also had a housekeeper and land girl who'd trained as a model. He knew that fashion would attract women visitors. I think that was part of his reasoning too. He created, as well as the fashion collection, a petting zoo, an aviary, and had wild animals. So he was sort of aiming to attract the whole family. He bought most of the clothes new from places like Vanity Walk in Dunedin, and overseas as well, and he bought directly from designers. And then when he started going to the Benson and Hedges shows, he would contact the winners through that and offer to buy their clothes sometimes too, I think. Or maybe they approached him because they knew that he was amassing a collection.
Yes. I feel that I need to declare not quite a conflict, but a bias, because my mum is from the Manawatu, and my own love of fashion, I think, stems very much from early visits to Glen Shee, to Eden's collection when I was a child, where I'd be left to try on the frocks, which I can see you cringing at the very thought of a 7-8-year-old girl, you know, getting into these fabulous...
Yeah, except that Eden did like to see them being worn. He encouraged people to do that back then.
Yes, yes, but unthinkable now. And while Eden and Mum would be gossiping, and in later years, after the display had been taken down and the frocks moved to storage, it felt to me like perhaps Glen Shee had been some kind of mirage, you know, something that was so unlikely to have existed in the black blocks of central Otago. You know, you'd be driving down this road in the middle of nowhere, and then there'd be this little sign. Can you remember what the sign said, Jane?
It said something like Fashion Museum. I can't remember exactly. I really remember it from much later on when it said more things, but it definitely said that there was a fashion museum and there was an aviary and a petting zoo, I think.
It was quite a rumpty little sign, and you'd look at it and go, yeah, right, of course there is. But I'm sure a lot of people were drawn in because it seemed so unlikely that you felt compelled to check it out.
And,
and
everybody that I've met in the process of doing this book who has been there remembers it.
Yes.
You know, it's one of those things that absolutely stays in your mind.
Indelible, and partly, I think, because of the unlikelihood of it. How did you first come to be interested in this? What's your background?
As you said, I'm a dress historian, and I became that by doing originally a home science degree, where, as well as majoring in nutrition, which you had to do, I specialised in clothing and textile sciences. Then a bit later I did a master's at Kansas State University, where I also did lots of clothing papers. That was a mostly papers master's. I worked at the University of Otago teaching social and historical aspects of dress and dress construction. And I did a PhD during that time where I looked at 19th century women's dresses, which was a mix of history and material culture study, actually, you know, getting up close and personal with all those dresses. I've also done a fine arts degree and taught at Otago Polytechnic. And I'm an honorary curator at Otago Museum for their dress collection. So I've kind of immersed myself in that dress area.
Where do you find the time?
I love it. I love it.
I think you've possibly the most, you're the best, have the best frock qualifications of anyone on the planet, Jane. And I think it was through your role at Otago Museum, Te Hura, that you came to know Eden Hoare.
Yes, it was. I was asked with the other honorary curator to go and advise Eden on how to look after the clothes a bit better and display them maybe a little bit better, which we did in the 1980s. And out of that visit grew the idea for an exhibition, which we had at Otago Museum in 1989, which was called One Man's Fantasy.
And how did that go?
Mixed reception, because I think we realised afterwards that the end of the 1980s was too soon to do an exhibition of 1970s fashion. You know, fashion's cyclical nature means that when things are just past fashion, they go so out of fashion that people hate them.
Deeply unfashionable.
They are hideous, really. And certainly some of the feedback we got was along those lines.
Charming.
Yes, exactly. But I think now is a much better time because the 70s is kind of back in, as it were, in terms of being vintage or cool or something.
Much more covetable,
And I think that's why the exhibition and the book are now resonating with people.
They've found their time. Mm. Tell us about the clothes in the exhibition, because you've talked about Eden buying some clothes from Vanity Walk in Dunedin, which I think we can all remember with, you know, loving memories of Friday night trips to town where you'd Google the windows, never go in, of course. and you've talked about him buying Benson and Hedges clothes, and I think he also had some connections with Miss New Zealand. So, yeah, tell us about the clothes.
Well, he knew what he wanted, I think. He wanted things that were really eye-catching. So when he went to Vanity Walk, he would select the clothes with sequins, feather trims, capes. There are lots of capes in the collection. And often buy a few at once, so Margaret Farry told me. But he also bought leather garments and wool garments as examples of products that his farm was producing. and he was really interested in those things. He's got a few things from Wapiti Handcrafts from Mossburn, for example, where they were converting deer skin into clothes in the 1970s. And he's got other prize winners like Australian Gown of the Year, a Clio magazine prize winner, who knew?
Who remembers Clio magazine?
Exactly. And he had met designers like Kevin McCann. It was Kevin, by the way, who called him Eden from Dunedin, which is where we filched the title for Eden in Dunedin. And Kevin also said that he wasn't really sure about his clothes going to this rural outpost near Naseby. But I'm betting that he's quite pleased now.
And if he's not, he jolly well should be.
And he'd met Vinca Lucas as well, so he's got quite a lot of clothes of theirs. But he also collected designers like Colin Cole, Rosalie Gwilliam, who comes from Whanganui, Joe Dunlap, who made a number of the leather garments and some other amazing things that she entered in competitions. He's got mother and daughter groupings, Marjorie and Maritza Shep, and Eleanor and Miranda Joel, and their clothes won competitions. And he worked with Alexandra designer Pat Hewitt as well.
It's a really comprehensive cross-section of designers from that period of New Zealand.
And they were all
well-known
in the 1970s and 80s, featuring in magazines and things, but we've kind of forgotten them now.
And do we forget them because not that long after that, mass production, Glassons, other kind of mass-produced New Zealand brands suddenly became, well, fashionable?
Yeah, I think maybe that's part of it. Making your own clothes decreased as those kinds of brands made it much easier to walk into a shop and buy things.
Yes.
Yeah, so I think that that is part of the reason.
Yeah, yeah. Is there a wider conversation to be started here, Jane, perhaps around our fashion history in New Zealand and the largely untold story around that?
Yes, I think there is, really. New Zealand by the 1970s had a wealth of seriously accomplished fashion designers. I mean, these people that Eden collected were definitely part of that group. They were influenced by international couture and they were using fabulous high-quality materials. I mean, that whole textile story, which I have told a little bit about in the book, is also fascinating, the way in which fabrics were controlled and imported into New Zealand. But I think by the 50s, you know, and 60s, glamour was, people loved it. You know, they liked to dress up and there were things to dress up for. And it was after the Depression and the post-war years.
And so, I suppose we were starting to see television as well, and so your external international influences were starting to come to bear on how we thought we could dress.
Yeah. I think Eden's collection is a kind of capsule of that time. It's comprehensive. It's not necessarily completely representative of what we were wearing in the 70s, because I was certainly not wearing clothes like that as a student and young professional.
Out there in your feathers and your sequins.
But it represents that kind of glamour.
It was very aspirational, wasn't it? Because I know I would go, you know, with my mum and we would look at patterns and then reality would kick in and you'd do an adapted version of the Kevin Bacan, Vinca Lucas look.
Yeah.
But still it was...
That was the beauty of the patterns too. They did that adaptation sometimes for you. I mean, Vogue brought in all those designer patterns in the 60s and 70s, which were fantastic.
Old school formal dresses. Do you remember the excitement of thinking, you know, you were finally going to be glamorous? And do you remember too, Jane, I'm sure that, I mean, I can remember the experience of going to town, often on a Friday night for some reason. I don't know why that was so significant. And as I said before, looking in the windows of shops like, there was Vanity Walk and there was another one, and there was the mantles department at Penrose's.
Absolutely fabulous.
So fabulous. Yes. And such a formative experience, I think, for a lot of, well, Dunedin women I can only speak for, in terms of your love of clothing, of dressing well, of dressmaking, of making the best of yourself, I think, in a wider sense.
Yes, absolutely. I think, I mean, we've lost something, but I guess we've gained something as well in all the changes that have happened since then. I think the downside, though, of all those changes is the fast fashion issue and sustainability.
And is there a conversation about sustainability and how while Eden's garments are high fashion quality, I proffer, never goes out of style?
Well, I'm a great advocate for shopping in your own wardrobe, although I'm not necessarily 100% good at it in terms of not buying anything else. But mixing up what you already own and putting it together in different combinations. And I certainly like to think that a beautiful dress can transcend time and be relevant and wearable, you know, many years after it's made. And lots of people do that and wear vintage and look amazing. But I think we do have to be a bit more conscious of the waste that is produced by the fashion industry worldwide because of global warming and climate change in particular. And, you know, people need to think about maybe wearing garments from the past for longer, or even the ones they've got presently for longer.
Yeah. I suppose one of the really notable things about the garments that are in Eden's collection and in the exhibition are that because they have been made of such high quality materials and they are so beautifully made, they're not, dare I say it, made in China, they are crafted. They're very well put together, which makes them highly sustainable.
Yes, it does. It does. I don't want to denigrate made in China, to be honest, because some things made in China in terms of clothing are fantastic. But it's that fast fashion make that's the issue, really. The cutting of costs, you know, even down to the amount of thread that's used.
Yes.
That's the problem, I think, and it doesn't matter where that happens. But there are lots of designers who are practicing things like zero waste now and slow fashion, and consumers who are reworking vintage and handcrafting, or even renting rather than buying.
Yes.
That's the other thing that's
happening.
It's become
hugely popular with formal dresses, I think, and even wedding dresses now, which is an interesting statement in itself. Do you think that there is something of, or is this just my imagination, but something of a rebirth of vintage dressing? Because I know that certainly when I was at university, wearing vintage was kind of cool. And I think we've gone through a period where it's not kind of cool, it's kind of uncool. And I'm noticing now that vintage shops seem to be having a bit of a resurgence.
Yes, I think that's true. Even, for instance, in the Oscars, some of those film stars will wear vintage clothes now, vintage evening wear rather than, you know, from the most recent collection. So that's a great trend, and let's hope it continues.
Yes.
Because I think, you know, status symbols like that can help extend those kinds of trends.
Yeah, influencers, I think they're called.
Yes, they are called influencers. Now I was trying not to use that word.
Yes. There's a lot of food for thought there, Jane. So where are Eden Hoare's garments now? I mean, I know obviously a few of them are in the exhibition, but how many did he have in total?
So the collection has 226 actual outfits and then quite a few, up to about 50-odd accessory-type things like shoes and bags, hats. But the collection's now owned by the Central Otago District Council. They bought it in 2013, and it was packed up in 2014, and it's in storage at Central Stories Museum in Alexandra. I'm part of a steering group, and so is Margie, that is working to sort of figure out what we do from here with it. So the book was kind of on our list of things to do. And there will be other exhibitions, we hope. I've got a list in my head of all sorts of exhibitions we can do. Part of its aim really is to attract people to Central Otago. I mean, we're kind of following in Eden's footsteps.
Honouring his intentions.
Yes, yeah, let's bring people to Central Otago. So that's partly why the photographs in the book are a homage to Central Otago as well as to the clothes. Yeah. So we're developing some standalone cases that we're calling pods that, you know, might be put in various places around Central Otago and people can go on and we drive by to see clothes. Don't hold your breath, people. It is going to happen, though.
They won't be in the middle of nowhere on this occasion, however. So the exhibition's on for 2 years, which I think says a lot about the importance of the collection and its expected popularity. What's next for you, Jane?
Plenty more work with the Eden Hoare collection. There are these more exhibitions we can develop. ID Dunedin, of course, And I'm an honorary curator for the dress collection at Otago Museum, so that work keeps going. I'm also going to be doing some behind-the-scenes work with the Toitū collection, which is one of the reasons why they were happy to have an exhibition that wasn't of their own collection in their material culture gallery. So, yeah, I've got plenty to do in the meantime.
A lot going on. So we've been fortunate to catch you just off the back of the launch of the book and the exhibition. Thank you for the extraordinary work and energy that you have put into both of these things and for opening a conversation about fashion design in New Zealand. We're actually really good at that. And we deserve more applause for that level of accomplishment. I've seen the exhibition 4 times already, I'm proud to boast, and I have read the book cover to cover, and I strongly commend both to our listeners, and I'll be keeping a sharp eye out for whatever it is that you do next.
Thanks very much.
And now here's Ross Curry with the latest on what's happening in the local art scene. This is Snapshot. Ross, what's on at DPAG this month?
Well, a new exhibition at DPAG in tune with the Christmas festivities just passed as Prayer and Declarations. Art and the Christian faith is explored and draws from the permanent collection at DPAG and also the Hocken collection. Experience the rich and complex legacies of Christianity and art history through a wide range of works. You can see works from Albrecht Dürer, Colin McCann, Christine Webster, Ralph Hottery, Robin White, Jeffrey Harris, and Jacopo del Casentino. Over the Moon is a family-friendly exhibition celebrating the vastness of space, the moon, and the night sky. This includes works by Ronnie Van Hoot, Michael Parakofai, and Francis A. Pritchard.
And I think we've got religious themes continuing at some of the dealer galleries in January, Ross.
Yeah, we have, kind of, sort of. At the Milford Gallery, the exhibition Heaven vs. Hell continues until the 26th. This shows a wide range of works. Daniel McCauley combines drawing and painting to create abstract and surreal, energized figures. George Saville's still life paintings spill out with exuberance and seem to be heaven on earth. Roger Mortimer's striking black and white photograph seems some distance from heaven with their foreboding narratives, and this finishes on January the 26th. At Gallery de Novo, the Christmas exhibition Around Christmas continues through January. This popular show is constantly being updated. And Effie 29 in St Clair has a group show with a stellar lineup. 9 creatives and a muse. All the artists have had connections with each other. Some have sadly died. The lineup includes John Drawbridge, Don Peebles, Robert MacDonald, Philippa Blair, Chris Adams, Peter Nichols, Greer Twist, and Di French. This exhibition has been extended to January the 12th. And Effie 29 has another exhibition, Between Art and Science, opening on the 16th. This features sculptor Johanna Zelmer collaborating with Dunedin-based Edwards plus Johan. Zelmer's sculpture interweaves with their photography, painting, and drawing, exploring the intersection of art, science, and humanity. Now, Effie 29 is open over the holiday period, so why not head down and also sample the nearby cafes? Maybe have a gelato.
Excellent advice. Thanks, Ross. And thanks to you, our listeners. Join us again next month for another dive into the visual arts scene in and around Dunedin. If you'd like to hear today's show again or listen to previous shows, you can find us on the Otago Access Radio and DPAG Society websites. If you'd like to join the Society, you can also find a form on our website or join at Dunedin Public Art Gallery reception. Thanks to contributor Ross Curry and producer and DPAG Society President Jonathan Quayoff. I'm Sally McMillan and you've been listening to Sightlines.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.